All right, we continue with our draft preview here. And,
all right.
By the way,
get it up.
Teddy and I.
Everybody still here? Besides some raffle winners that didn't get a Brady jersey.
Teddy and I had many talks at the office this season about that hat that seemed stitched onto Tom's head during every
You just didn't interview. Like the little fuzzy ball.
It's really big. Just cut really, really big. But listen, he's getting better at fashion advice from his spouse than I could give him. So let's be clear. She knows a thing or two about it. But let's look forward now to what's coming up at the end of the month. It is the draft. I think we have the draft picks that they're scheduled to have right now in 2013. Can we put those up there? Do we have them? Bueller? There they are. So there you see the picks. 29, mm-hmm. and then 58, 91, 226 from the Bears, and 235. When you look at those picks, you know, the last few years, Bill has been very, very active on draft day, Mike, making moves. What do you expect him to do now?
So we're going to get specific on some names here,
Trey? In terms of, he likes to accumulate picks. Is there enough there? Do you think he can find a way to maneuver and get the picks that he usually likes to play with?
I think he'll try to back out and accumulate some more picks. Doing some research before coming here today, he's actually made 50 draft day trades in his tenure here, 2000 to the present day. The only year he didn't make a draft day trade was 2004. So when you have the limited number of picks, usually that means you move back to accumulate more of them.
To anticipate what Bill Belichick's going to do on draft day is tough. Because I don't think anyone anticipated him moving up the way he did last year to get those players. I think Hightower and Jones, those type of guys. So I do see him moving out because you think about next year's draft also, just the regulatory picks that they have, if I'm not mistaken, Reese. So to accumulate for the year after also, not just maybe this draft, but next year's draft, that's what I see them doing. I wouldn't anticipate them having a first round pick this year. I think they get out of that first round.
Well, one reason he likes to accumulate picks is because he realizes it's kind of hard to hit every pick correctly. The more picks you have, the more competition you have, and it's easier to find a football player that can help your team through competition than through scouting.
And also, this roster, I look at it, and there are a lot of young players. There are a lot of young players on this team, and to continually add more youth, I think that Adrian Wilson sign was that much more valuable because of, I mean, I know he's older, but to be that veteran player and get in that locker room with a lot of younger players that are in that secondary, to have that mix is crucial for younger guys to see how the old man's working. You know, I think it's beneficial for them to see when Gerard came in. I mean, him and I were right next to each other in meeting rooms, and he could ask me questions, and I could see how young guys worked and vice versa. I think that's a great complement of eras, really, to have in that locker room. I don't think you want to get too young.
All right, so when you look at this team as it's presently constructed and you see the picks they have for now, what's the one thing they've got to get out of this draft, Mike? The one player they've got to get out of this draft?
I think it's a receiver, Trey. You know, it's what we talked about and the struggles they've had to do that. And who might that be? I mean, that's going to be a great discussion we can have with Trevor, who knows, you know, more
Absolutely.
Of the prospects than I do. But I just look at the team, and I could see them complementing in the draft at various positions. But I see a major hole at outside wide receiver that needs to be filled.
Trevor, you cover the college game almost exclusively. Which ones do you really like that might be available when they're picking?
That's the big question. I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson from Tennessee would be great on this team. Because, again, remember what they need from a young receiver right now. Stretch the field, be able to reliably burn the defense when they bring safeties up to gum up what they're doing with the tight ends and with the running backs. Well, Cordarrelle Patterson probably won't be available when the Redskins pick. There's another guy, Justin Hunter from Tennessee, that probably will. The question there is he the kind of guy off the field and in preparation that the Patriots want? Because he wasn't an egregious knucklehead at Tennessee, but people from there
just
tell me
just a slightly egregious knucklehead?
He was a mid-level knucklehead.
Is there a range of
and
knuckleheadedness we're looking at here?
But the thing is, what you've got, though, is a whole big long list of receivers after that that can run, that can make plays, that'll be available in the second round. One of those guys is Aaron Dobson from Marshall. Guy most people have never heard of, but he's 6'3". He's a big, tall guy, about 210 pounds, runs fast enough to stretch the defense. But because he's got such huge, long arms, he will look to Patriots fans like Randy Moss when he catches the ball. Because even when he's covered, he's open. He can reach out and make one-handed circus catches. He can do all kinds of crazy stuff.
By the way, you timed that perfectly. You literally did that as you were saying
yes.
that.
And that's what they need. They don't need a guy to have the chemistry of a Wes Welker, to read defenses like Welker did. But he's a guy that Brady can use to burn the defense and open up the middle. And Dobson in the second round should be available.
In this era of football, and we talked about it, and you mentioned at the beginning of the program, they got to find stops. With the way this team is constructed right now, is their best defense just keep adding to the offense? Is that the best way for them to improve?
You know, you could make that case because look at Green Bay. The Packers have been competitive for a long time, and they've had holes in that roster for a long time. But one thing they always make sure is that Aaron Rodgers has good receivers.
And I think the one thing when you're – I mean, I think the Patriots finished 25th in yards allowed. Is that right, Reese?
Right around there, Ted.
Don't look at that stat. When people say the Patriots are the 25th ranked defense in national football, like, that's baloney. Don't look at the yardage stat. Today in the NFL, the yardage allowed stat is overrated. All right, look at points allowed. Look at the turnover ratio. Look at red area defense. These are all areas where the Patriots' defense did well in. And hearing you say to Trevor is Patriots' best defense, you know, building up their offense, it irritates me. Yeah. You know, it should irritate.
I started that when I talked about your purple shirts. So
it should irritate every defensive player in that locker room, okay? Because you want to be known as a championship unit. And I think they're close to being there because of the way they've taken the ball away, how well they've played in the red area. So those are places, everybody knows what the red area is, right? Everybody good on that? Okay, good. When you get closer to the end zone, about the 25, 20-yard line in, that type of defense, that's what you got to worry about being good. Do me a favor. When someone says 25th and they're talking yards allowed, don't listen to them.
Yeah, but points do matter. When you score 28 points in the playoff.
Points, sure.
You give up 24 or you score 28. No, give up 28 points in the playoff and lose the game. That's a problem.
There you go.
And so there's two ways that you can beat the other team. One is outscore them. And if you look at quarterbacks, you know, you can enable Tom Brady with extra receivers to be able to outscore Peyton Manning or outscore Joe Flacco, whoever they're playing. Or you can degrade the other quarterback. And that's where pass rush comes in. It's the same total effect. You get there in a different way.
Well, let's talk about degrading, because that's a lot of fun for guys like Teddy to degrade an offense. There's a lot of pass rushers we talked about, Trevor, in this draft. But one guy that's kind of interesting that's out there is a guy who hasn't played football a lot of years. He's a former shot putter from Estonia at SMU, a guy named Margus Hunt.
Margus Hunt. He's 6'8", 277, track athlete, discus, shot put, all those things. Came to the United States to further his track career. Ended up in a football uniform. And the thing is, this guy at 6'8", 277, ran a 4.60 40 at the combine. 4.6.
He's athletically freakish.
That's rare.
Yeah. That's rare. But that means he can beat offensive linemen off the ball. He can get to the quarterback, and even when he doesn't get to the quarterback, he can get up in the air like J.J. Watt of Houston and knock balls down. This is the kind of a guy that can degrade the opposing quarterback, not just by getting to him, but by standing in front of him and limiting his passing lanes.
Is that something, Teddy, that has been missing from the Patriots' D, in your opinion, the last couple of years?
Well, I think the addition of Chandler Jones helped. That interior push where mostly all of the batted balls occurs comes from the inside, and it's been Will Fork. But to have a guy like that, you're saying he's 6'8", a tall guy like to get batted balls, because there's more sometimes than just sacks in terms of sack numbers. You look at how many sacks the team's had. Ball disruption is huge in the National Football League on the defensive side of the ball. And a part of ball disruption is altering throws or batting down balls, because sometimes you really don't have to bat the ball down. It's just disrupt a passing lane. So how can I really show you guys? Can you be somebody for me?
Yeah, he better be short.
Reese is going to be Tom Brady, okay? He's going to be Tom Brady. Here you go, buddy. So face the crowd right here. Now drop back to pass. Be Tom Brady, just like this, okay? This is what Tom Brady likes to look at. If all of you are receivers here, okay, he can scan the field and look, and he can deliver it to the receiver. Tom doesn't like his receivers putting his hand up like that, though, so don't do that. So these are the windows, okay? So when you get in that pass rush window with Trev, you're right here, another defensive lineman, coming from the inside. You saw the picture that Brady saw right here, looking at you as receivers. If we had our hands extended, this is the picture he sees now. Sometimes that's all you need, okay, to bat the ball. I know Tom Brady's a little bit taller than Reese. a lot taller than Reese. But the picture that he sees from here to be able to scan and then seeing someone that's 6'8", that's taller than Trev in front of you, is a picture quarterbacks don't want to see.
And the hard thing there is that we watch on TV and say, why didn't the quarterback see that guy? How come he didn't see that linebacker under the route? He threw it right to him. Why couldn't he see that receiver? Because he doesn't see it from way up high where the camera is. He sees it down low. Another thing about Marcus Hunt, though, is that, remember, he throws the shot put. Or puts the shot, whatever. He throws the discus, right?
He takes a very heavy metal ball and goes that way with it.
He has got forearms that are massive and powerful hands. And I'll tell you, as a defensive lineman, stand up. Be my offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Pass rushing is about getting his hands off of you. You want to break down his feet and your hands. You break down his feet with all kinds of technique. But he wants to get here and stay here. If you've got powerful hands, you can defeat his hands and keep him from being able to stop you from doing what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Marcus Hunt has such powerful hands, and that is so underrated when it comes to a defensive lineman's capability of defeating what an offensive lineman tries to do to block.
You know, the other thing, too, and we talk about it, and we certainly saw it this year with J.J. Watt, and you guys are mentioning batting down balls. It seems like, yeah, everybody should be able to do that, but not everybody can do it on a consistent basis. It is a skill, right? It's an anticipatory thing you need to develop.
And part of it, it's almost instinct sometimes, instincts and intelligence, knowing if it's a 3rd and 3, the chances that you'll get a 3-step drop rather than a 5-step drop to your offensive lineman, how they set you.
Right.
In short versus drop, in short drop back versus traditional 5 and 7-step drops. When I get an offensive lineman in front of me, he sits down, that means the quarterback's about to throw the ball, and that's when you can use those instincts to maybe bat down a pass. J.J. Watt has it mastered. He got a lot of publicity for it last year, but it's an instinctive / intelligence type of thing.
And to simplify this, I know, Teddy, you've mentioned this. Remember what Tom Brady said in that Super Bowl against the Giants?
Yes.
It's like trying to throw through a forest with all those trees, and he was frustrated because of the length of the Giants' defense. One name to remember just for everyone here, Armand Armstead. The Patriots signed him, went to Southern Cal, would have been a fairly high draft pick a couple years ago, had a heart condition, went to the Canadian Football League, sort of showed that he was healthy, could play, and they got him as a free agent, didn't even have to draft him. He could potentially be that type of guy because he's also, you know, has some length.
Yeah, if I'm the Patriots, if Marcus Hunt is available, even though he's very raw, I would take him at that spot in the first round and not trade down because he has the potential, not guaranteed, but the potential to be an elite pass disruptor from the defensive end position, and that's a guy that doesn't come along very often.
And to your point about Armstead, we've seen a couple of players over the last few years come down from the CFL. Cameron Wake comes to mind and really make an impact on that defensive side of the ball. Okay, so we're looking ahead to 2013, but let's go back and see what we think of the 2012 draft, all right? Let's just go name by name here. Chandler Jones, what would you give him?
I thought solid pick. One point I'd make on him, just the physical development from year one to year two. He said this offseason he wants to increase his upper body strength, and I think if he can do that, that could be sort of the start of putting together something even more special than we saw his first year.
I'd give him run a B. I thought he started out with a splash, and I think that staying healthy and realizing the length of the season, and now starting to understand how much he'll be depended on, that you're the pass rusher, you're the guy, the number one guy that teams will not only looking to scheme against, but the Patriots will be looking to you to be productive in terms of sack numbers. It's a little responsibility a young player has to grasp.
Yeah, I'd say incomplete because he showed flashes, but like you talked about, durability, reliability, doesn't matter how good you are unless you're there.
You want to talk about getting physically stronger? He's in the right family. His brother Arthur Jones was with the Ravens, won a Super Bowl, and their other brother, John Bones Jones, is the ultimate fighter. So he wants to get worked out. He's in the right group of guys to do it with. Dante Hightower, what did you make of his season?
So I'll do a B since we're grading here. And credit to the person that was here last year who actually asked about Dante Hightower. I don't know if you remember that, Trey, but someone actually said, what do you think about Hightower? And, of course, I said, yeah, I'd be surprised if that happens.
It's this guy over here. Stand up. Take a bow. Stand up.
I didn't forget about that when they drafted him. Great call.
I want you to know I totally forgot about it.
I would say a B, Trey. I mean, the question to me is, can he stay on the field on third down? I think solid defender against the run, first and second down, but when they go to those sub packages, can he hang?
Do you got any predictions for this year? Cornerback.
Cornerback?
I need a name.
Yeah, you gave us a name. No, you can't just throw up. Don't say football player. You gave us a name. Xavier Rhodes, a corner out of Florida State, is the first
also
name that came
up. Jonathan Banks at Mississippi State.
You're on the record. Okay.
Yeah, noted in the captain's log. Okay.
Dante Hightower, to me, I thought he did well. I'd almost give him a B/B+ because I know how hard it is to play linebacker there and how much is asked of him, how many times he needs to know a defense and relearn a defense and how many adjustments he has to go through. More sub-package ability that he may have may cater more to rushing the passer rather than the cover. He's a big body. It's almost like a part of me thinks the Patriots need to go for a cover linebacker in this draft. I know that's something that's off the wall, right? I mean, you're thinking receiver, you're thinking defensive back, but a guy right now, Jerod Mayo, is the only true every down linebacker that they have, every package linebacker, because it's not about downs, it's more about package specific this year, in this NFL, because you can be in dime on first down on some of these offenses that you play. So package specific, Jerod can play in all of them. They need another linebacker along with him that can play in all of them and cover in man-to-man and zone situations, because with Spikes and Hightower, these two big thumpers, they get up against these spread offenses where they got to cover a small back coming out. It would be difficult for them to do.
Well, Kevin Minter of LSU is a linebacker that has kind of flown under the radar, but his stock is rising now. And in recent mock drafts, he's being taken ahead of where the Patriots pick. But he's a guy, he's not real tall, he's only 6 feet tall. He's a guy, though, that can play the run. But he's also showed at LSU that while he doesn't have track speed, he's able to turn and go and get deep and limit what tight ends and running backs are able to do in the passing game. So that's a guy that, you know, might be a sleeper.
Minter, LSU, Brown, Kansas State, a couple guys that are possible.
Kiko Alonso from Oregon was also in here for a visit, more of a mid-round, late-round type of option.
All right, let's go look at the rest of the picks from 2012. Tavon Wilson, Jake Beckett, Nate Ebner, Alfonso Dennard, Jeremy Ebert. When you look at the rest of these guys, which one do you think might have the most potential going forward?
I think Dennard, we saw a lot of it last year, but the question and the concern is he even going to be available? I think his sentencing is April 11th, so we'll find out more at that time, but that would be the one name that stands out only because, Trey, we already saw what he can do. He made a big difference for him.
Yeah, and Tavon Wilson, sort of a baptism by fire last year at times, where I think we all remember the big plays in Seattle and St. Louis where they were almost copycat plays. And if there's one thing that irritates Bill Belichick more than anything, are error repeaters, okay? And when you make the same mistake twice, I think Wilson was a culprit of that. So he's got to learn a lot of learning to do to contribute to that secondary.
Well, he'll be able to prove that he can learn.
Right.
Because you know, you've got to prove you can learn. So he'll have an opportunity to either really rise up or really be discarded, depending on whether he can learn that.
Entire 2012 draft class, which player has the bust-out year?
I'd say Chandler Jones.
I'd go with Hightower. I think that he can start making plays, I mean, rushing the passer also. So I'll go with Hightower.
Yeah, I'd go with Hightower as well, just because he's got the ability to do a lot of things. And don't discount the fact that if Belichick wants to, he can send him after the quarterback and he can get there.
Okay, so again, audience participation time. We're going to do a little take your pick here. We're going to go with the panel first, and then we'll ask you for your responses as well. It's not fact or fiction. We're going to do this a little differently. We're going to ask a question, and they'll give their answers, and then we'll see what you guys, whether you agree or disagree. Okay? First question. Wes Welker had 134 receptions, including the postseason in 2012. Over or under for Danny Amendola?
Under.
Definitely under.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, under what they said.
Yeah. Under. Yeah. Audience?
Under.
I think we can all agree on that. Memo to producer, that was a bad question. all right, the Patriots D, 37 sacks in 2012. Over or under in 2013? Ah, you guys are second.
Over.
You're mistake repeaters. Come on.
I'll say over.
I'm going to go over also. Yes.
Yeah, I'll go over in part just because they've already upgraded the secondary, and I think that'll lead to more sacks.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Over.
All right, we're all simpatico right now. Rob Gronkowski, Gronk score, Gronk spike, Gronk happy, played in 11 games last season. Over, under on how many he plays in 2013? Dude!
Such a huge question for the team. I mean, and it really highlights what we don't know at this time, the health of players and how you adjust to it. I'll say over.
Over, under, 11. I'll give him over. I'll give him over, yeah.
Really optimistic here. I'll say over as well.
We got an under right there.
Why? He got hurt a lot.
He did.
It happens. He's just such a likable kid. You know what I mean? He was up in the studios a couple weeks ago. He's such a likable kid. You hope he kills the microphone. Just a little more focus, right, Ted? Just a little more.
Yes,
less
and just,
body slamming, more.
I mean, the last year at Arizona when he was there, too, he had a back injury. I don't think he played at all. So now it's almost like he's got an injury history, okay, where the way he plays, this guy plays hard, okay? He plays hard. He's not going to shy from anything out there. He won't save the equipment. That's an old saying in the locker room. Save the equipment now. Just get down to the ground. As big as Gronk is, he's not going to save it. He's going to try to take on hits, and, I mean, he's going to suffer some, I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying he's going to get hurt, but he just takes those hits. You absorb those blows, and they have a cumulative effect.
It's not really the blows from the defensive players that I worry about. It's the blows with the ground that I worry about. Look at it from a standpoint of a defender. You've got this big, tall tight end going up in the air in the end zone maybe to catch a pass, and there's no way in the world you can get up there with him. So what do? You go low. You hit him and spin him around and have him come down on the side of his head and see how long he can handle that. And to me, that's the big danger for him.
Maybe the best answer is that you hope for the over, but you plan for the under. And that's what Bill Belichick has done by signing pretty much every tight end that's ever played in the National Football League.
Right.
Well, the names the last few years.
So they got the Ballard kid, huh?
That's right.
Yeah, Jake Ballard. Right. You got Algie Crumpler, who was in here for a few years, whose full name is Algernon Darius Crumpler, son of Carl Lester Crumpler, brother of Carl Lester Crumpler Jr. There you go. Michael Ho'omanaminui, or as they called him in St. Louis, just Illinois Mike was enough. They didn't want to go through all that. All right, we talked about the possibility of trades. Patriots currently have 5 draft picks. Over, under, how many they'll have when this is all said and done?
Say over, and in addition to over, 1 for next year's draft that would be a surplus.
I would say over with possibly, don't count out a trade with Kansas City. Because didn't they have years of track record of
right.
The New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles always traded, right? They had something going with Andy Reid. Maybe they keep that going again.
I'll say over, but I'm worried because from about 20 to about 40, there's a lot of similar valued players in the draft. It makes it less likely some of them will want to trade up early in the draft unless somebody really likes one of those quarterbacks, maybe high in the second round, who might trade up late in the first round to grab him. That's what they want to watch for as fans, to see what they might do in terms of getting more picks. Who likes a quarterback enough to jump into the Patriots spot to get him?
Over or under in terms of picks, 5 or more? Over. Over. Now, this last question is sort of a bonus question. It's not really over, under. We'll make it a yes or no. Teddy Bruschi is eligible for the Patriots Hall of Fame for the first time this year. Does he get in, yes or no?
Yes.
It'd be great.
Yes.
Thanks. It'd be great. It'd be great.
They're not booing, they're saying Bruschi. By the way, if it doesn't happen this year, I demand to see the count. All right, we're going to finish this up with a couple of questions from the audience. Do we have microphones set up somewhere if the people can go to and you can run to it? Do we have that? We got them right there. Okay, as they're getting the microphone set up, one on either side, just some final thoughts about what guys are looking forward to going forward.
One thought I had, Trey, that I didn't mention before is everyone wants the Patriots to get that receiver, that Mike Wallace-type receiver who went to the Dolphins for, what, $13 million?
A lot of money.
Let's not forget what Mike Wallace was in 2009 at this time. He was a third-round draft choice out of Mississippi. Who didn't run the full route tree, who was a fast guy, but they had a lot of questions about him and as a player. 4 years later, he is the highest paid player in free agency this year. That's what the Patriots need to find this year. They can do it, even though their track record has shown us that they've struggled in that area. You have to take a shot at it, though.
What I'm looking for is the Patriots' offensive scheme this year. How unique is it going to be? You saw from week to week last year how they always had a different game plan, where the hurry up, the multiple tight end set, spreading it out, or trying to establish the run game. And now with Chip Kelly coming into the NFL, has that affected their philosophy? And what philosophy will they have? Offensively, they're fluid. Defensively, this team is always fluid in what philosophy they're going to have, really how they're going to approach the season offensively in terms of attacking opponents.
I want to see whether they add defensive players who could win their individual battles. when you guys were at your height, you had great schemes from Belichick and the defensive staff. But at the end of the day, you were out there facing another guy, and you had players that could whip the other guy. There's not enough guys on this Patriot defense, in my opinion, that can do that on a consistent enough basis. I want to see if they can upgrade the numbers of guys who will be like you. Yeah, it's a great scheme. Yeah, I'm in the right place. Now we're in the heat of the moment, and I'm going to whip you.
To that point, which is a great one, Trevor.
Yes.
Tom Brady's playoff record as a starting quarterback is 17-7. Terrific. Since Super Bowl 42, he's 500. He's won as many as he lost. Did he get worse? The team around him got worse. There aren't Vrabels, Brewskis, Ty Laws, Rodney Harrisons out there around him. Tom is terrific, and they took care of him. You got to find those complimentary players around him. Quarterbacks don't win playoffs and Super Bowls. Championship teams win playoffs.
The young players must take the next step, because that's really the only step they have left. They've won the division. They've been to Super Bowls. And you're talking about the third, fourth, fifth-year players on this team. The only check left on their resume is championship, right? That's all they need to do. That's the last step. They need to take it.
It's the last step, but as you know, it's the hardest step.
It's a hard one to take, yes.
Okay, I think we have a couple microphones set up over here. Do we have people walking to them? Someone controlling that somewhere? Because I can't see a darn thing from anywhere. We got mics out?
Got one here.
There's one over there. There's no one over there on that side of the room, and there's one over here. Do we have a question over there?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you think Monte Teo is going to the Pacers if he's in the fourth round?
Okay.
Manti Te'o.
Did you hear it?
Do I think Manti Te'o is going to go to the Patriots in the first round if he's not there? I think everyone knows that answer is no. But I'm going to say I do think Manti Te'o is a first-round pick. And I think he's a player that proved that with improving his 40 time on his pro day. The teams that I would see him in, I think it's going to be Minnesota at 25. That's where I think that he would go. I don't know how good he would be in this type of system where there are elements of two-gapping, where I see him more as a middle linebacker in a Tampa 2 type of scheme, a guy that can run and hit that's protected. So I would say nobody.
Mike?
What he said.
Yeah.
Trevor? Ditto. Okay, question over here. Yes, sir.
All right. I was just wondering, over the years when Patriots have won the championship, they really haven't had any outstanding wide receivers. They have some good wide receivers that played really good roles, but why all of a sudden are wide receivers the main focus?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, I think the NFL dictates part of that, the way the game has changed.
And I'll answer it only because I think in the panel here, I probably talk more about that position, you know, than Teddy and Trevor. To me, I sort of look at when Gronk went out, you know, what happened to the offense? You know, they just sort of were easier to defend. So I think, to me, to balance out the offense and to make it a better offense, you have the running game, which I think is at a pretty good level right now. You have the inside passing game, which is pretty good right now. But I see a big void, you know, in the outside passing game. And if you can add that, to me, that's an unstoppable attack.
Yeah, think of these two words, force multiplier. That guy that can stretch the field on the outside makes the other guys more effective, and it limits the different looks that the defense can use, which means there are fewer defenders to physically clog those underneath lanes, and it means it's much easier for the quarterback and receivers to read. A force multiplier is why they need a receiver that can beat the defense deep and keep safeties back with it.
So now you got me thinking about David Tyree making a catch off his helmet. Because we did have a pretty good receiver that year that we just didn't finish the job. So, that's all I got.
Yeah. I think there's an element of good fortune involved, too, because if they did win it in 07, maybe, you know, the context of the question changes a little bit.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say, yes.
To that point, I got it. As soon as that Super Bowl was set up, Teddy was doing the show with us that day, and it was the Giants and the Patriots, and I looked at him and said, man, this is going to be a tough 2 weeks for you. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's just, we're going to talk about it a lot. Yeah, over here, got another question?
Yeah, first I want to thank Teddy for the Super Bowl rings and coming back from the stroke. Pretty unbelievable story.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks.
Mike Reese, I love the reporting also. But my question is about the wide receivers. Emmanuel Sanders is out there. You guys said it's a deep wide receiver draft. I'm wondering, in the third round, would it be better to get Sanders and trade that pick, or pick one of the wide receivers from the third round?
So I'll go with the first part. Maybe, Trevor, you can fill me in on the second part based on the prospects out there that might fall into that range. So Emmanuel Sanders, restricted free agent from the Steelers. If the Patriots want to sign him to an offer sheet, they have to do it by April 19th. So you have to sign him to an offer that is rich enough for the Steelers not to match.
And the Steelers have cap issues. They have lots of cap issues.
They do. So that's the exact question that I'm sure the Patriots are trying to answer. The reason I would probably lean toward it not happening is the economic aspect of it. You have to sign him to a pretty good deal for them not to match, whereas if you can hit on a receiver in the third round, even the second round, you're getting that player at very reasonable costs, and it helps you on the cap.
And that's what you have to ask yourself. It's not as how good is this player, but how good is this player, or how good are the several players we could sign instead of that guy for the same cap room? If you look down into the third round and below, there are receivers like Terrence Williams of Baylor, like Marcus Wheaton of Oregon State, that have proven they can get down the field and stretch the field. And so they don't even have to get one in the first or even second round to have somebody with some wheels that has proven he's a deep threat, at least at the college level.
If there's any burst of activity from the New England Patriots, because it's amazing the free agents that are still available out there, I mean, at all positions, it usually, that I'm used to seeing, it's around draft time, if there's any draft day dealing, or right before training camp. Because when you get these veterans that are still out of work right before training camp, it's when you can get them really cheap. And then that's when they're willing to come in, and that's when the Patriots usually have their pick of the litter because they want to come into a winning program. And they know, all right, if I'm just only going to sign a one-year deal, let's go and try to win a championship in New England.
Question over here.
What about the honey badge in the second round? Is that a fit?
Tyrann Mathieu out of LSU.
No. I don't like honey badger here. Part of the reason is part of his value is as a returner. And in signing Washington, you've got that squared away. He won't be your returner here. Then as a cover corner in the SEC, when offenses knew where he would line up, they went after him. Alabama, when they played LSU in the national championship game a couple of years ago, in the second half, spread out the field so that they would know exactly where Honey Badger would be, and they went after him over and over and over again. And he was there. He just didn't have the ball skills or the size to be able to make the play. The reason he was so successful, I think, at LSU, or one of the reasons, is that they moved him all over the field so offenses couldn't target him. Sometimes he'd be at press corner. He'd be a softer corner. He'd be over the slot. He'd be a free safety, a strong safety. He'd blitz from any of those positions, and you couldn't really target him pre-snap. Well, in college, you're looking really at scheme on scheme. That's how it works. In the NFL, all scheming has to do is get you to a physical individual matchup. The formations, the motions, all the stuff that they do is to get this guy on that guy over there for the most part. And in the NFL, Honey Badger's physical limitations as a defensive back, I think, will be exposed.
Smaller, right.
So, and that plus the fact that they'd have to trust him that he's put his personal problems aside, that's not enough potential upside, in my opinion, for the risk that's there.
The one you talk about is positional flexibility, though, and I think that's the one thing that would be desirable with New England is that this guy has done so many different things that I can just see Coach Belichick having fun thinking him up of how to use the guy.
That is true. Mm-hmm. That is true.
To that point, if you really read his story and know a little more about his background, there's a lot of things that kid has really had to battle through and overcome. There's a lot there, and we'll be getting into that as we lead up to the draft. But I will tell you this, both Mel and Todd, who were not real high on him at all when this whole process of him missing a year of school, they've really liked what they've seen out of him at the LSU Pro Day, the combine, his interviews. They've raised his stock a little higher where they think he might be taken in the second round, but there are major question marks about his physical limitations.
And Trey, you know, we talk about like the 30 visits that teams get. They can bring 30 prospects in before the draft and what that means. He was one of them, so
yeah.
He's at least on the Patriots' radar. He was in here this week, just something to keep in mind.
Question over here.
It's obvious that it seems like the Patriots need a deep threat. What do you think the odds are that they draft Denard Robinson?
The quarterback slash going to be a wideout from Michigan, Denard Robinson.
I love Denard Robinson. He's an electrifying athlete. And when he gets into space, there's nobody better last year in college football, the last 2 years, than Denard Robinson in space. Now, they got him into space from the quarterback position, which he won't play in this league. But if someone's willing to take a risk on him and draft him as an athlete and see if he can learn how to run routes, learn how to line up at the running back position and take the pitch out and do different things, then I think Robinson could be an X factor like a Randall Cobb that could really cause matchup troubles for defenses. I like that kid.
In terms of the Patriots and Robinson, if they were to, it'd be late if he was still there. It'd be late. I think they'd try to fulfill other needs before getting to him.
Agree.
Yeah, and the good thing about Denard is, like so many other kids that played quarterback in college, he's not hanging on to quarterback. He knows his opportunities lie at other positions, and he's embraced that, which is nice. Yes, sir.
Just want to start out by thanking Teddy for being one of those special players through his career.
Thank you.
I go full tilt, full time,
yeah,
all the time.
All right. What you got?
And I'd like to agree with him as much and everyone else. We do need a wide receiver, but more importantly, I would love to see someone in the middle or another defensive end on the pass rush, as well as a corner, as Teddy said. I think our defense needs more upgrading than our offense. I think Tom Brady can throw to just about any one of us and be successful. I'd like to see the corner and the pass rush.
Is there a question?
Yes. What do you think is more important, that all-important wide receiver or an upgrade on the defense?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I don't think it's black and white. I think you try to do both of them, and then you make your decisions based on what opportunities are there when it's the time you pick. You know, I wouldn't want to lock in and say, take the sixth receiver, because that's what you have to do when the best pass rusher, Marcus Hunt, maybe, you know, is there for you. So I think both are important. It's just a matter of understanding what's out there and then adjusting as the opportunity is presented.
How shocked would you be if they took a running back?
Shocked.
Because of
they
Ridley.
They have Ridley, Vereen.
Ridley and Vereen, maybe, I mean, I think that's also a position you can upgrade. I mean, how dependable do they think Stephen Ridley is in terms of his ball security? And I would love to see a big running back there, because with the New England Patriots, I mean, that game plan going from week to week, who knows if they had the people to just, hey, let's just pound this ball. We got our offensive line set, one of the better offensive lines in the league. Who knows?
I think you can never go wrong drafting with that first round pick. Stud offensive lineman, stud D lineman, great pass rusher if he's a linebacker and not a D lineman, or, you know, just a great pass rusher, or cover corner. And because the offensive line is pretty well set here, if I'm the Patriots and they've got some guys that are pretty closely rated when they get to the first pick that they take, whether they trade down or not, and it's a cover corner or a D lineman or a pass rusher, I would take that guy. I would just take that guy, because to me that's where the core of the team is.
There is an element of positional value that,
sure,
Bill Belichick does, you know, would take the defender over the receiver if they were equal.
Especially in the way that the NFL is now in terms of defenses and what they have to prepare against those passing attacks to cover and to put pressure on the passer.
And that's the thing that people sometimes forget about the draft. It's not about the player. It's about where you get the player. The value you get out of that pick is almost more important than anything else. We have time for two more questions, one over here and then one over here. I believe we're going to you, sir, next.
And before we get started, I just wanted to make another introduction here. Mike Reese and I do a lot of work for ESPN Boston. I hope you all visit the site. We take pride in all the hard work we do, but there are a couple guys here that also work very hard for us at ESPN Boston. It's Field Yates and Mike Rodak. You guys, raise your hands. I make these guys work as hard as I did when I played, so we can give you guys good coverage. So thanks for seeing the site.
All right, one question over here, then one over there. Yes, sir.
All right. You mentioned Marcus Hunt, but what about a defensive tackle that could rush the pass? Because last year they were after Red Bryant from Seattle, and this year they're interested in Desmond Bryant from the Oakland Raiders. So at 29, I think that there would be a good selection of defensive tackles that can get to the passer available with that 29th pick. In mind, I have Kawan Short from Purdue. What's your thoughts?
Short from Purdue is actually an interesting prospect. I was talking to Ryan Kerrigan, who played at Purdue, and now he became a first-round draft choice for the Redskins, about Short this past training camp. And what Kerrigan told me was that he isn't just a space heater in there. He's an actual penetrator. He's a disruptor. He gets behind the line, causes all kinds of trouble. So a guy like that, it, to me, is just as valuable as a guy that would come around the edge, because you make your edge rushers more effective if you have a guy in the middle that can penetrate, push that pocket so the quarterback can't step up.
Mm-hmm. It's a position they've been trying to address in free agency. You have Vince Wilfork, who's your rock there. Who's next to him? Is it Kyle Love? Is it Brandon Dederich? I think they would like to upgrade there. So it's certainly, I think it's a really good point that you bring up.
Because Love and Dederich, the way they're almost like anchors in there against the run, and how they can occupy blockers. But in terms of getting up the field and getting that pocket pressure, I mean, that would be an upgrade to go up and get a guy that can help Wilfork.
Lost in just how big he is. Vince really is a phenomenal athlete. I mean, he really, really is. People don't understand that about him. He really is.
By the way, Trey,
look
for this name, too. In case something like that happens, don't be surprised if it's Jesse Williams, nose guard from Alabama.
Absolutely.
That guy's a beast.
He certainly is.
Can he pass rush, or is he more of like
He'll push the pile so the quarterback can't step up, but he's one of the strongest guys on the team. He's got freakish weight room numbers.
Last question over here with the eye black. Love it.
So what happened with Brandon Lloyd?
Well, he's no longer with the team.
Yeah, well, like...
No, I. You know what's funny? We were actually talking about that. That's actually a great question. We were actually talking about that before we came down here, because clearly towards the end of the season, it seemed like Tom and Brandon had established a little bit of that relationship that he never had with Chad. He made some plays, and they let him go.
I think there's two factors here. His production was pretty good. Obviously better than Chad Ochocinco, but... you're always looking at production relative to the price. And they had to pay him a $3 million roster bonus by the fifth day of this league year, which has since passed. And they didn't feel like his value met that price. And then the second is, how did he fit in the locker room? And that's a question that, depending on who you ask, some might say it wasn't a great fit. Others might say, you know what, we could have dealt with it if he was playing at, let's say, the veteran minimum salary.
And it's almost like, did they see him and as like almost he's maxed out in terms of also his age? He isn't one of the youngest receivers out there. Age again,
over 30.
Over 30 years old.
He's been around for a long time. Bounced to a lot of teams: San Francisco, Washington.
And I think we all see how. I mean, Welker's over 30. Lloyd's over 30. I mean, do we make a decision this year? We got to get younger. Okay. Do they think that, because in the NFL, I mean, it's strange as it sounds, once you get over 30 years old, the clock's ticking. You know, you don't know how many years you got left, Trev.
And you better have the work ethic in order to extend those years. And when he got to the Redskins, his first training camp there, he actually said to the media, this is not inside info, this is public, that he said, yeah, during the offseason, I don't really work out all that much. I just get in shape during training camp.
Not what you're looking for.
Not here. Not here. Now, he might have changed that, but that's an old dog trying to learn a new trick, and there's all kinds of things that fit as a Patriot that are very important.
To that point, and thank you for that question, when you watch Brandon Lloyd, he makes highlight reel catches all the time. But think about it. San Francisco, Chicago, Washington, Denver, St. Louis, New England. You see the catches. Why is he bouncing around all those teams? There's something else going on there. Guys, it has been a lot of fun for us to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
For Trevor, Mike Reese, and the great Teddy Bruschi. I'm Trey Wingo. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.